Rick Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. They come from all walks of life, resembling lives just like you, our listener. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are many times brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. With this determination, courage, and insistence, they are driven to put more into life than they take out. Please listen to these inspirational stories, as they may be closely related to your own. And yes, I am Henry Cuenca. Today's guest, an explicit visionary with extraordinary sensitivity towards other heads, a group of over 100 employees in a rustic rural setting. She is characterized by her peers as wonderful, friendly, terrific wife, a sister when needed, and compassionate to the core. Her childhood years created within a powerful sense of belonging. Perhaps it was part of the systematic process of growing up in a small Gold Rush community, carved out by her grandparents, or maybe it was the family influences of regular family table talks about current events, politics, elections, and of course, always maintaining a sense of gratitude. But for whatever reason that tripped her into the direction of community building, she has created a compassionate buoy of her life's journey. Please listen to the heartfelt expression of today's guest, Lynn Dora, CEO of Country Health and Wellness Center. Lynn, thank you to my debut first show.
You're welcome, Henry.
I hope you didn't think that I said that you were my first live victim, but my first show. Lynn, before we get started, this being my first show, I would like to take a moment to thank those who helped in launching this program. I would like to thank my wife, Marianne, of course, for tolerating countless hours blocked into my office at home. Also, daughter Lori, leading design on my website, along with Megan. Of course, brother Bob, in adjusting the tunes we've searched for this show, and want to acknowledge other supporters like my sister and my brother-in-law, Olga, in Santa Rosa. All of our children, even touching parts of the world, and Lynn, even including Rome, Italy this morning. So our grandchildren have been very supportive from Miss O and Elaine in Santa Barbara, and specific support from Tony from Redding, who always has worked closely with me in my developing mind, along with Gordon, a very, very close associate, and our priest, Father Jonathan. Not to be overlooked, I thank the wonderful staff here at KKRN making this DJ position so attainable. Of course, I thank Ellen, our station manager, Bobby, and her committee as program director, and of course, my newfound buddy, Shane, such a pleasant, richly suited individual. Lynn, my principal job today is to probe into your life journey to pick out the essential experiences you've traveled that have not only led you to being a successful person, but also an inspirational heroine for others. Lynn, could you start us off this morning by summarizing for us, you know, your current perspective in life?
Oh, my current perspective. That's an interesting slant on it. I guess I would say that my perspective is and really always has been to pay attention to where I am. And the, you know, the somewhat trite phrase these days of think globally, act locally really has been the way I've lived my life. And I, you know, economics, some of the larger global challenges that faces us now and have are hard for me to get my head wrapped around. But if I look at Round Mountain and Montgomery Creek and Redding and Shasta County, I can see a lot of ways that I can be helpful and enjoy myself and work with wonderful people. So that's what I continue to do, is just kind of live life day by day where I am, staying informed about what's going on in the bigger picture and relating what I do today to the bigger picture in a way. But I'm fortunate to live in a very beautiful place. My husband and I still, Bill Watson is his name, enjoy good health, and we have two young adult kids that are out there living their lives, and I feel very, very fortunate.
Well, you are a true visionary, Lynn, truly visionary. And I think the really thing that really separates you from others that have this visionary capability is the sensitive side of you. You're very compassionate. You are very open to listening to people, truly listening to people. And I would guess that by your opening of yourself is kind of perks up that visionary aspect of your life as to the next horizon that you want to bring to you. Lynn, could you start us off and telling us about Acorn? Because Acorn is kind of the start of a number of enterprises or initiatives. And I know that you are the founder, and I don't know whether you like to be called a founder or a foundress, but I'm going to call you a
founder. Founder is fine.
Oh, is that okay?
Founder's fine. Mm-hmm.
So could you tell us about Acorn?
Yes, and I need to share that credit with my husband, Bill, because we really did it together, and it wasn't just the two of us. It was a small, it was really the same small group of friends that's done everything. So Acorn Community Enterprises, I actually need to go back a bit farther than that.
Mm-hmm. I just want to tie this in a little bit. Acorn is the founding concept or enterprise where there were spinoffs in other activities, major activities, mm-hmm. including this radio station, KKNR, was attached to the original concept of Acorn. So I'm sorry, go ahead and take it from there.
So Acorn Community Enterprises was born out of a very kind of specific vision, which was in my past and by training, I'm a therapist. I'm a marriage and family therapist. And I have worked a lot right here in these hills and worked with many people who were courageous and brave and recovered from addiction, child abuse, recovered from lots of things. But recovery also requires a job, really, to sustain it.
Right.
You know,
sure.
And there were no jobs and no skills. These were people that hadn't been to school and didn't have skills. So the idea of Acorn Community Enterprises coincided with the requirement in the state of California to replace all old gas station tanks with mm-hmm. double line tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And the gas station in Montgomery Creek wasn't going to do that. It was going to close, and the adjacent cafe, part of one parcel of property, was closing. So downtown and the store had just closed. So downtown Montgomery Creek was going to go away. So we came up with this idea of Acorn Community Enterprises, and we leased the property.
What was the specific introduction of that idea? Where did that come from? She's smiling.
It came from a camping trip, a solo camping trip that I did outside Whitmore, and it was a very intentional camping trip. I went to a place called Jack's Backbone, which is a very beautiful and wild place, and I went there really to try to meditate on what's next? Should I go to Reading and should I develop a private practice in Reading? Should I get a job with an agency in Reading? What should I do? At that point, our kids were like 7 and 10, I think, something like that. And I spent the night there and thought about all those things and came back with the idea that, no, I really am a person who works locally. And over the years, locally has gotten to be a bigger patch of ground. And we'll talk about that later, I imagine. But back then, locally, really, my kids were still in elementary school right across the street from what was about to be the vacant cafe. So Bill and I just dove in head first. And
so that was the founding idea while meditating out in mm-hmm. nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
The sense of community, it seems like, really started in your early years. You were born in Angels Camp, also known as Frogsville. Is that correct?
Well, the fairgrounds is called Frogtown, and it is the home of the Calaveras County Fair and Jumping Frog Jubilee.
Absolutely. So you came from a gold rush grandparents.
And great-grandparents.
And had a very close relationship with your family. And this sense of community, I guess, really started back then, that has kind of continued as you move forward in planting new seeds. Can you tell us about your early years growing up?
Yeah. Angels, as some of you out there, I hope, have been there. It's a charming gold rush town, but it's not hasn't been touristed up in the way that Sutter Creek and some of the others have. When I grew up there, there were about 2,500 people in and around town. And it was a very, very safe place to grow up. You know, I'm 68, so you can imagine that back then we had the run of the town on a summer night. It's Main Street runs at the bottom of a kind of a gulch, so houses are built up on steep sides on either side, and my best friends lived across town, and we would yell at each other and whistle at each other when it was time to get together. It was fairly idyllic in many ways, especially as a young child. Mm-hmm. My family had been there for a long, long time. My parents were not particularly social people. So there weren't, you know, lots of parties or people over for dinner, but there was a fabric. That's what it felt like, was that there was a community fabric that was underneath me mm-hmm. that would catch me no matter what. I lost my mom right before I turned 20 to leukemia. She'd been sick for about a year. And then I was in college at that point, and going back home at that time, and not having to say anything to anybody, just having everybody knew what had happened, and they didn't have to talk to me they didn't have to give their formal condolences. They just hugged me, and we'd go on. And it was a very nurturing, compassionate feeling.
Well, you describe your family life as very ordinary,
mm-hmm.
right? And that you did ordinary things that ordinary families basically do. And one of the things that caught my attention about the family dynamic were these sessions where your parents and yourself would talk about things, I think, that are very interesting, very needed. I mean, you reviewed the economic, the social, the political things. Even as a young girl, you sat around with your family and you talked about these things. I'm going to ask you about these things a little bit further, Lynn. But right now we need to take a little break. Listeners, hang on. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. We'll be right back. If you are just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5, listener-supported radio. And my guest today is Lynn Dora, and we're talking about her childhood growing up in a rural California company. And we were asking her about the family councils. I don't know whether that's what you called them, Lynn, but these gatherings where you would sit and you talk about very current events. What can you tell us about those experiences and some of the dialogue that you all engaged in?
Well, it was very informal. I mean, it was just kind of how conversation flowed. It's interesting, just this weekend, Bill and I were with our kids down in Sonoma County visiting an old friend, and we were all in the car together, and somebody mentioned how they just read something about the number of states that no longer require civics classes in elementary school.
Oh, boy.
And when I was in eighth grade, I knew everything that there was to know about civics. I knew every cabinet member. I knew how the government worked. And yes, our family talked about those things, but I think that those things were a much bigger part of many people's lives then. Mm-hmm. We were more connected to our government and perhaps felt more invested in it. I don't know. But that was definitely true, that we would talk about, you know, lots of newspapers came into the house every day. Lots, that's an exaggeration. There were basically only two in Angel's Camp. The Stockton Record and the Calaveras Californian.
But your mother was a librarian, which I think really mm-hmm. helped that dialogue along.
I'm from a family of readers, for sure.
Readers, for sure. Mm-hmm. And your father worked for PG&E.
Yep.
And he was injured.
He was. When I was quite young, the injury was before I was born. He was operating one of the hydroelectric plants that are much like the ones on the Pitt River around here, a little bit smaller. And the whole voltage of the power plant went through him and miraculously did not kill him, but really damaged his intestines primarily. Mm-hmm. So he continued working for some years after that, but his health declined.
You had a vivid memory or recollection of work going through that period, I presume, with your father's disability.
Mm-hmm.
Your grandparents were of tremendous influence to you?
Only my grandmother. All my other grandparents were dead by the time I was born.
Uh-huh.
But she lived with us, actually, for my whole lifetime, and she outlived both of my parents.
Really?
She died when she was 98.
Oh, my goodness. Bless her heart.
I was just in Angels a few weeks ago to see my brother. My oldest brother still lives there, near there. And Bill and I happened to go to the cemetery. It's an old gold rush. You know, they're fun to go to, those gold rush cemeteries. And there's a lot of Doras there. a lot of Doras.
You said you had mentioned that one of the influences that your parents really presented to you was gratitude, which is a wonderful virtue to have. Was this just inborn, systemic with the whole family of being grateful for things?
I don't know how to answer that, Henry. I don't know.
You're just a grateful person.
You know, I do think that having lost my mom when I was 19, and then my dad died when I was 30. So I had lost both parents at a relatively young age. Not super young, but young enough to realize that you know, losses happen in life, and enjoy today and be good to the people that you love today, because you don't know how many more days you have.
Well, that's a reality. What was the biggest influence that your father left with you?
Thoughtfulness. He was also a great listener. He was on the school board, the high school board in Angels Camp for 35, 38 years.
Oh, my goodness sake.
Long, long time. He was very smart, but he didn't talk unless he had something significant to say.
That's a sign of a smart person.
And he listened and processed very, very well.
And the influence of your mother, I guess, manifested itself in you in what way?
I think that I'm a nurturing person. You know, I love to cook. I love to take care of people. I love home. I have a good sense of how to make a place feel like a home and comfortable and welcoming and not fancy, but anybody can walk in the door and feel like it's okay that they're there and they don't have to be on their best behavior.
Right. Aside from your parents and your grandparents, who were other influences, major influences in your life?
I had a high school teacher. So, you know, the conversation so far has kind of been wrapped around, in my mind, what my earlier childhood was mm-hmm. like through elementary school, say. Mm-hmm. High school was much tougher. I'm smart. I was smart then. Angels Camp was, and it's changed a little bit, but certainly then it was a very working class town. There weren't a lot of people who had been to college, and my parents hadn't been to college. But I have two older brothers, and the first brother went to college on a football scholarship. Didn't finish, but went to Occidental on a football scholarship. Mm-hmm. And then my middle brother, also older than me, went to Berkeley. And so I had the assumption that I was going to go to college, and there was a teacher in high school. So high school, you know, high school is kind of a raunchy time for lots and lots and lots of people. So I was a chubby girl, and I was a nerd, and I was smart, and I had lots and lots of friends. But, you know, I was the girl who did all the decorations for the prom but didn't go to prom.
Oh, okay.
But my science teacher, who was also the vice principal of the high school, I was his, one period a day, I was his secretary. And he was very, very inspiring to me, believed in me, and kept saying, your life is going to be really different when you get to college.
He saw it coming.
He did. He saw it coming and knew, you know, he'd seen it before, and he saw it again. So he was a great friend to me in high school.
So he was a major influence in your life. Mm-hmm. You went on to college, and tell us about your education.
I went to Berkeley right from high school, and that was a very big change for a country girl from a very white part back then, a very white part of California. There was a Native American community in Angels, but really nothing else, no other ethnic minorities, although there had certainly been during the Gold Rush. It was a very international place during the Gold Rush. Mm-hmm. So I went to Berkeley, and I was scared to death.
That's quite a contrast.
It was a big contrast. It's a big place. The classes were huge. You know, English 1 had, I don't know how many, 600 people in it or something.
Oh, my goodness.
So a very harsh transition. There were days when I'd walk around campus crying, saying, I don't belong here. I don't belong here. But, you know, by the end of the first year, I had made friends, lived in a dorm, and that's mm-hmm. how you make friends. And it ended up being a wonderful time in my life, and I'm still close to those friends.
And you received a master's degree, and that was in?
I did, although I got a degree from Berkeley in cultural anthropology, thinking that I wanted to be a public health nurse, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting because I'm sort of as close to a public health nurse now as I could be without being a nurse.
Right.
But then I just lived for many years, for 10 years, I guess.
In Berkeley?
No, everywhere, uh-huh. all over the country.
Oh, you traveled.
I traveled, and I did a lot of different things. Among those things was I went and lived in New England for a little while and worked at a summer camp for emotionally disturbed boys. And there I got a job making jewelry, actually polishing gold and silver jewelry for a jeweler. And then came back and set up my own shop and in the Bay Area and sold on the street in San Francisco and Berkeley for a number of years. And then decided that I wanted to actually kind of settle more. So I moved back to Angels Camp and opened a little jewelry store.
Oh, so you do have that art creativity part of you.
Yeah.
Do you continue that as a hobby?
Not jewelry. Uh-huh. I mean, I do some beading, but that's one of the things that I'm craving now as I... like what I've got in my ears right now. I'm looking forward as I ratchet down my work life into bringing some more artistic creativity back in.
Good for you. Lynn, what are you passionate about?
I don't know. I'm passionate about helping people feel that they can do and have what's important to them, in helping people not feel victimized by the system, by their families, by their high school friends, whatever it is. I'm passionate about connecting with others to do something good. And during the break, Shane said it would be good if you actually mentioned who is that gang of people that has done so much here in the hills. And it really, the idea for Hill Country Community Clinic was born on a drive north on I-5. I was coming back from the Bay Area, and we'd had little conversations about wouldn't that be cool, but I kind of got hit with oh my God, we could really do this. And the people that were part of that picture were the doctor. That was really handy that we had a doctor. Joe Stenger, his wife, Kathleen, Kathleen's brother, Richard Hardy, and his wife, Celeste. And then as I was driving up, they all lived in Redding, and Joe was just finishing the residency program. But as I drove north, I realized that what we needed was the energy of some mountain folks if we were going to try to do this in Round Mountain or Montgomery Creek. So Bobby Tryon and Terry Orwig, I knew if we got those two women engaged, that they could mobilize everybody else in town, and we could make it happen, which we did. And that same gang of people gathered around when we started Acorn Community Enterprises, which has, as I don't know if the listeners know, but Acorn is now the sponsoring organization for KKRN. So Acorn has morphed enormously and will continue to morph, but always done community good.
Right. So you had you also had mentioned that you're very passionate about your family, and I know you're very, very proud of your children. Tell us about your children and your husband.
Yeah. Well, my husband, Bill, grew up in Escondido, outside Escondido, back when it was really country, and got to be too many people, so he moved up here about 40 years ago to Big Bend. We have 20 acres on the far side of Big Bend. And his life has really been dedicated to kids, working for YMCAs, running camps for kids, all of that kind of stuff. And my children, who are 27 and 30, are living life in a big way. The older Evan, our son, is 30, and he's well educated. I won't brag about where he's gone to school.
You can brag. That's okay. This is brag time.
He went to Santa Cruz for his undergraduate, and then he has a master's in geography from George Washington University in D.C. And now he's working at a ranch in the Bay Area that's kind of a think tank ranch, really working on, there's a kind of a new environmental term that is coming out of the, kind of in response to global warming, called regenerative agriculture,
I've heard of that.
Yeah, how agriculture and animals and how we grow things can actually be an antidote to global warming.
Right.
And our daughter Zoe is 27, and she went to Santa Barbara, and then she got a master's in community health in Montana, Bozeman, Montana, at Montana State, and is interested in doing many of the same kinds of things that I do. She did her master's project in an Inuit village in Arctic Greenland, north of the Arctic Circle, a village of 400 people.
How interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Lynn, I think we're going to have to take another little break. And listeners, hang on. We've got a little bit more time to go. If you're just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio, and I am interviewing Lynn Doroth today. And Lynn, I was going to ask if you would mind if we opened up a caller to call in and ask you some questions.
Sure, that'd be fine.
For any caller to be interested in speaking with Lynn, you can call 530-337-1101. And I noted, let's see if we get somebody to call us in. Lynn, you had said that when I ask you what is your motto, if you had a motto for life, you said that you had a strong sense of spirituality and to do no harm to people. That kind of characterizes the gentleness of you. But can you tell us a little bit more about your belief in your spirituality?
I find it in nature. I find that connection in nature and with people. But the place that connects me to God, to the universal truth, to the oneness of all things, is most easily accessed for me outside and in singing. I love to sing, although I don't sing enough, so my voice isn't as good as it used to
be. Well, I miss that singing. What do you sing? What do you like to sing?
Oh, I don't sing opera. Okay. I sing old folk songs, and there's for many years up here, there's been a women's circle, so there's some kind of women's circle songs, and yeah, I won't be surprised if we don't get a call just because it's a brand new show.
And well, that could be. Right? Do you play an instrument?
I don't. I wish I did, but I don't. I'd like to learn to play the accordion.
I've thought of that, too. I actually thought of playing the banjo, but there isn't any banjo teachers in the area, so I had to...
That's not true.
I could not find one.
That's not true, Henry.
I could not. I had the Banjo Association scour their...
Here's the man to ask.
Really? Yeah. Oh, my buddy. Well,
We're getting a caller. I'm going to put on some music for a second while I bring the caller up, okay?
Yeah,
that'd be
got
fine.
It.
Okay. Caller, hang on. We're going to... I'm going to go ahead and put some music on so I can bring the phone system up.
Okay.
And I have to stop the recording for a second to do that. So, listeners, just give us a couple seconds. And if you're going to be one of the callers that call in, just once again, give us a couple moments here. We'll be right back after this music break. Okay, we're ready to take calls on the Henry Cuenca Show, and back to Henry. And
do we have a caller on the line?
No, Henry, we have a caller on... Well, you know what? We do have one on the other phone line here. Let me bring him up for you here, Henry. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and go on. Just don't seem to be bringing that caller up, but go ahead and try again, caller, if you'd like. We'll try again. Go ahead, Henry.
Lynn, what is the best advice that you've ever received?
know. It kind of I couldn't say who gave it to me or if it's a compilation of lots of different things. But it's something about just keep doing the right thing. And it'll be hard sometimes and easy sometimes, but put one foot in front of the other and keep going after the right thing to do.
Well, there was a well-known quotation by George Cecil. He said, "On the plains of Hesitation Beach lay the bones of countless millions who, at the dawn of victory, sat down to wait, and waiting died." And I guess that kind of parallels what you're thinking is by putting one foot in front of the other. Never stopped. You must go through a lot of shoes.
And I have really weird feet, so it's hard to find shoes.
And I guess all that has just come to you pretty intuitively, right? When you wake up in the morning, what do you think about when you first wake up in the morning?
Well, I'm lucky. I wake up happy pretty much every day. It's a fresh start. And I right now, I think about, because I'm very busy right now at work, I think about the day today and, you know, what do I need to do today? What are the six things I need to do today?
Do you make out a daily list?
Yes, I do.
You do that at night or you do it in the morning?
I usually do it at night. Occasionally, if we're doing something else, I do it first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm. So that's your operating system mm-hmm. for the day.
Doesn't have a ton of things on it, but it's got the essential things on it.
Yeah, I think nearly all successful people, right, do that. And wake up in the morning and say, what's on my list, what I got to do? And it jumps out at you as you jump out of bed and you're off and rolling.
Yeah.
So I guess that habit you've had since were in school.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I mean, this is a much bigger job than I've ever had. I mean, whoever would have thought that Hill Country would have more than 100 employees and also have clinics in Reading now. So we've grown fast over the last few years. So I'm having to manage myself and other people better than I ever have had to.
Sure. What is the vision that you have for the future of your health clinic?
Well, I guess to say it really briefly, we have always been very committed to trying to help people with more than just healthcare. Like, healthcare treats symptoms, and the cause of the symptoms is what we've always tried to get at. And now the healthcare system in this country is paying more attention to that. So the vision for my vision for Hill Country, and it's a shared vision, is that we will get better and better at helping people who have lost their lives in a way. And mm-hmm. you can't help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. But there are many people out there that, you know, including some of the homeless on the streets and other people who do want to change their lives, and we want to be a partner in that.
And what type of programs do you have for those people that have lost their lives, as you say?
Well, there's a bunch of different programs that all are kind of funded by a different funding source, but the common denominator in all of them is a role that we call a care manager as opposed to a case manager. Just sounds more human. So a care manager is like a buddy that might work with 20 to 30 people in varying stages of difficulty / recovery. And one of the things that we're working hard on now, and we're doing it in Reading and we're about to do it in Round Mountain, is a program for opioid addiction called mm-hmm. medication-assisted treatment, which includes a replacement drug for the opiates, but also a relationship with a care manager and counseling and group work and a kind of a comprehensive recovery program.
Sounds like a mentoring type of...
It is in a way. Uh-huh. It is. Yeah. Coaching.
How are your successes going?
Oh, my goodness, the success stories. You know, that would be, we have some really inspirational care managers, and that would be another interview for you to
really?
Do.
Uh-huh.
Or one of the people in recovery, you know, pregnant women who have had their babies and now are getting their lives together, families reunified. There are some very, very inspiring stories.
This must be very gratifying to you to see these enormous, great works that are being done by your
people,
by your facility, and including your people, obviously. So this must refuel the pump, I guess.
It does. It does. And you know, one of the things that I learned really very much back when I was actually being a psychotherapist myself, and now in the years that I've been here back at Hill Country, is that you just have to really celebrate the successes as they happen, and they don't happen for everybody.
Right.
But they can happen for anybody at any time. And I got to visit the Greater Los Angeles Veterans Administration Clinic a couple of years ago in their homeless outreach program,
mm-hmm.
and got to meet some employees of that program who were former participants who had been formerly homeless veterans. And one of them had been outreached to by a program employee for 10 years before he finally said, yes, I want help. And now he's working there. So the light can go on at any time for anybody.
Absolutely. Lightning strikes anywhere, does it not? What are your top two skills?
I'm a good communicator, both mm-hmm. verbally and in writing, which also includes being a good listener. And I can be pretty persuasive with people who have money, meaning both the federal government,
well,
the state government.
Well, I guess I'm off your list. I didn't make it.
So I feel like one of the ways I can look back at my life and define what I've done is that I've redistributed wealth. You know, I brought some here to
Well, you were
Mountain.
A salesperson in Berkeley selling...
Selling jewelry
Selling
on the
jewelry,
street.
So I guess that's the big carry forward.
Yeah.
So you're a good communicator.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously that gives you the headwind to continue your works in your health clinic. You have to have that component to grow. Absolutely. So tell me what you're not good at. What are your biggest challenges that you have?
I am not good at physical organization.
Meaning?
You've been in my office, so there are piles of paper everywhere, and mm-hmm. I can find stuff. I can find it, but I walk into an office that's really well organized, and I think, man, it would be nice to be like that, but I'm just not.
Well, you know, I have a career of walking into financial officers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would always get worried. When you'd walk into a CEO or a CFO's office and there's not lick of one paper on their desk, I would get kind of concerned about that. So I feel more comfortable when there's a little bit of clutter, right? It shows something, right? So you're not a detailed person. So you surround yourself with competent people that drive those things for you, no doubt.
Well, that's been the wonderful thing about coming back to Hill. I've been the CEO for about 15 years now. And the great thing about coming back here has been that Hill Country, especially now, is big enough. At Acorn, I did everything. Bill and I kept the books. We filed all the federal papers. We ordered the food at the cafe. We did a lot of things that we were not the right people to be doing,
well,
but there's nobody
job.
Else.
You got the job done.
We did.
Yeah,
we did.
Absolutely.
But here, I'm in my sweet spot. You know, I get to do the things that I'm good at.
And you've got a great following of a lot of people that validate that. When somebody looks at you, what would you like for them to think about you?
I would like them to think that There's an older woman who's still living life fully, is comfortable with herself, and continuing to figure out how to be an active participant in life and community.
I think that's a bingo, because when I first saw you, I said, oh, you took the words right out of my mouth. I think, quite honestly, that by looking at you, I think that's what people think.
Thank you.
That was my first perspective. As I told you, I think, the first time I met you, didn't I? What catastrophic events, what are the largest catastrophic events that you've endured in your life that really made an impression on you?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the loss of my mother too early. But then in many, many ways, the Fountain Fire in 1992 was a catastrophic event for me and everybody else who was here in Round Mountain, Montgomery Creek at the time. The clinic burned. And at that time, that was even before ACORN. At that time, my husband and I, with another couple, were running a boys' home for abused and neglected boys up on Woodhill Drive, just above Montgomery Creek. Woodhill burned. And the fire stopped at our driveway.
So did it really?
Our home did not burn. Our home on Big Bend Road did not burn, but it literally stopped. Our driveway was all red. There'd been a dump right at the top of our driveway.
Tell us a little bit about that fire, because that was a very, very, very large fire.
It was, you know, I mean, it's small or not so big by today's standards, but it was kind of the first fire, I believe, in my awareness, it was the first fire in California that behaved more like the ones that we're having now. It was so fast.
In Los Angeles and it
was,
Santa Rosa.
In Santa Rosa. It was so fast and it was so hot.
What time of the year was that? I thought it was the fall.
August,
oh.
And my son was 5 at the time, and he was down visiting friends of ours right where the fire started, Janet and Marty. And Marty had gone off to fight the fire as soon as they became aware of it. Janet called me and said, didn't want to scare me. She said, you might want to come down and get Evan because there's a fire and Marty's over there and I'm going to go over there. So come down. So I loaded Zoe. Bill was off on a run. He was running. I loaded up Zoe in the car. She was 18 months old.
Oh, boy.
And we went down to get Evan, and by the time I was driving down Buzzard Roost Road, there was fire on both sides of the road, and the sheriff stopped me, and he said, you can't go in there. Look at the fire. And I said, yeah, well, my 5-year-old's in there, and I'm here, so I'm going in there. And he said, okay. So I went in, and I passed Janet riding out on a motorcycle behind somebody on a motorcycle, and she yelled at me that Evan was at the store. So I turned around and drove to the Round Mountain store, which had maybe, I don't know, 100 people, 200 people there in shock. And it was clearly still coming. So I got Evan. We drove to the clinic. And I said, you guys, we've got to load the charts and get out of here. And we did. And 15 minutes later, the clinic was on fire.
Oh, my goodness.
It was really quite extraordinary.
And how much of the clinic did you lose?
Everything.
Everything.
There's a little art piece in the lobby now. Uh-huh. I don't know if you saw that, Henry, which is pieces of molten equipment and, there's a pair of tweezers and a few things that came through the fire, kind of put together as a fire collage. That was all that was left.
Did you lose all your records?
We did not lose any records.
They were off-site? Or?
No, we loaded them. They were paper, loaded them into cars.
Oh, and, how fortunate, my goodness sakes. Yeah. Wow. You've mentioned your husband several times throughout our conversation this morning, and he appears to be very, very close to you in terms of being like a team. Could you tell us a little bit more about your husband?
Yes, he is he's really a very spiritually driven person, not religious. He's a student of Eastern religions, particularly Taoism.
Mm-hmm.
he's a nurturer. He's a caretaker of things, of people and animals. We have some cows. We have chickens. We've got a little farmstead. He's a very, very nurturing man who has given his best energies to children for his lifetime. He's funny. He's introverted. He's basically an introvert who occasionally busts out. He's a wonderful man.
And what did what was his occupation?
He, as I said earlier, he worked with kids mostly at YMCAs and after school programs. You know, hundreds of backpacks in the Sierras, opening up kids' hearts and minds to the wilderness. And then for, gosh, for how many years? For 8 years, something like that? No, longer. We worked at Woodhill House, which was the home for boys 8 to 14. And that program was really focused on getting them out in nature.
And you met your husband where?
Here.
Right here.
In Big Bend.
By chance, huh?
I guess, or not.
I had asked you one time what your first thoughts were in the morning. And you said, well, you think about your hip replacement.
Yeah. You mean, how does that fit into my life now, my hip replacement?
Have you had it done?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yes. It was done a year and a half ago. And that's a good thing to reflect on. That for probably certainly for the 5 years immediately preceding my hip replacement, and for longer than that, in a lesser degree, I was in a lot of pain a lot of the time. And I feel like that experience has given me a greater degree of compassion for some of the people that we treat at the clinic who it's easy to not have patience for. Mm-hmm. But when you're in pain all the time, it's a bummer.
Oh, there's no question.
It changes everything in your life.
Their whole attitude.
So I got a hip replaced in October of 2016, a year and a few months ago, and I have no pain, and I am just so very, very grateful.
Good for you. You also said after you thought about your hip replacement, you smiled and you think of God every morning. You check in with Him. Mm-hmm. As you wake up.
Yes, I feel very grateful. Very, very grateful. And I drive way too much. I'm driving to Reading, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week, and I certainly never thought I was going to do that. So every time I turn down our driveway, I say another thank you to God for having made it safely home.
Well, you do. We do hear of accidents on 299, but you know the road has really improved. It's a very it is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful road, no question. The only exception is probably when we have a little bit of snow. We're getting towards the end of our show, and I just wanted to ask what other things that you may want to put out that you may find as noteworthy or meaningful to, you know, the general community. You are certainly one that is looked upon as a leader of the community. And so I just like to let you just talk about your community and things that you may want to say as a wrap up.
Well, I one thing that I haven't talked about that is very meaningful to me is that of all the things that we do and have done here at Hill Country, perhaps my favorite one is that we've always had a policy, or certainly for the last 15 years, had a policy of hiring local young people into part-time jobs that we could wrap around their school schedules, whether that was a high school schedule or a Shasta College schedule or a homeschool schedule. There's a lot of homeschoolers up here. So over the years, we've helped a bunch, and two that come immediately to mind are now registered dental hygienists, making $70,000, $80,000 a year doing work that they're, impressive, huh, Shane?
Very, very impressive, no question.
And, you know, giving back, you know, working in with the kind of people that we serve here at the at Hill Country who maybe haven't had dental care for a long, long time.
Oh, boy.
And yesterday was my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. Belated birthday.
Thank you. And I got a message from another local young woman who's currently in Myanmar, traveling in Myanmar. and it'll make me cry actually to
say.
That's
okay. I've got.
She sent me a message to say, Lynn, thank you so much for believing in me before I believed in myself.
Oh boy.
Working there at the clinic opened my mind and my heart to all the possibilities that life has to offer. And now she's cruising around, learning about the whole globe.
Oh, my goodness sakes. And how old is this young lady?
She's probably now 25, mm-hmm. and worked here when she was 18 to 20.
I would assume that you have mentored a lot of people from this community.
Yeah, that's true. Unquestionably.
And what a wonderful thing to be an inspiration to people, to the extent that they go on and they serve others,
mm-hmm.
and go back and give credit to the influence that you've made on them and the community and society as well.
Yeah, it's it feels good. That's a good thing that I'm proud of.
I'm going to ask one more question. What is your next visible goal for the clinic?
Well, we have begun real work on the Center of Hope. The Center of Hope will be a clinic much like the one in Round Mountain in Redding, but it will also include kind of a wellness center that has 16 housing units for homeless college and high school students.
Wonderful. Well, Lynn, we appreciate very much the opportunity to meet with you and share the stories of your life. And we look forward to seeing you more. And I want to stop in your place and see the parcel of the burnt part.
Yeah.
So you have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5. We are supported by listeners like you and brought you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button, or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can also call 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio. You are listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN. And if you have a suggestion or would like to be a potential guest on my show, you can reach me by calling 530-356-9811. And I want to thank you for joining us and have a wonderful day.